You're listening to the CyberWire Network, powered by N2K.
Hey, everybody. Today, I want to highlight a name that all of us know well, and that is our sponsor, Splunk. You need to keep operations humming around the clock, but potential disruptions are everywhere. Splunk helps you predict problems and find and fix issues fast so you can reduce risk and ditch downtime. The world's largest enterprises rely on Splunk's unified security and observability platform to become more efficient, resilient, and innovative. With Splunk, you can react quickly, evolve faster, and be ready for anything. Stay ahead of disruptions. Learn more at splunk.com/resilience. And we thank Splunk for sponsoring our show. In the complex world of enterprise identity, securing legacy web apps at scale can be daunting. Strata Identity makes it simple. With Strata, you can effortlessly integrate non-standard apps with any identity service, like MFA or SSO, with zero coding and zero hassle. Designed by identity architects for identity architects, Strata works with every vendor, standard, and app architecture. This means your apps can now speak modern protocols and integrate seamlessly with your chosen identity services. From securing on-prem web apps to migrating away from outdated identity providers or consolidating them, Strata helps you keep your complex access policies as you modernize your identity infrastructure and get rid of technical debt. Join leading organizations like 3M, Dallas County, and CIBC in securing your apps with Strata. Visit strata.io/cyberwire, share your identity security priorities, and receive a complimentary pair of AirPods Pro. Offer valid for organizations with over 5,000 employees. Connect today at strata.io/cyberwire.
The Shadow Brokers open their Exploit of the Month Club at the low, low price of $22,000 in Zcash. Group IB finds more evidence that the Lazarus Group is a North Korean intelligence unit. Extortion, both real and bluffing, grows in underworld popularity, but Carters are still with us, alas. President Macron tells President Putin everyone's on to his use of Russia today and Sputnik News for disinformation. And if you're a regular Joe or Jane looking for some Android action, take this advice straight from the shoulder. Steer clear of StarHop and CandyLink. I'm Dave Bittner in Baltimore with your CyberWire summary for Wednesday, May 31st, 2017. The Shadow Brokers have released more details of their Exploit of the Month Club. It will cost you about $22,000 per month to join. The club, say the brokers, whose identity remains at least publicly unknown, is, quote, being for high rollers, hackers, security companies, OEMs, and governments, end quote. Symantec and others have linked WannaCry to North Korea by its evident connection to the Lazarus Group. Skepticism about that attribution has been based in part on doubt that the Lazarus Group really is a tool of DPRK intelligence services. Researchers at Group IB, a Russian security firm with offices in Moscow and New York, have published the results of their investigation into the Lazarus Group. They conclude that, yes indeed, the Lazarus Group is in fact an agent of the North Korean government. Group IB looked at evidence found in the threat actor's command and control infrastructure. The Lazarus Group's attacks used three layers of IP addresses, and Group IB succeeded in identifying the two addresses at the bottom of the campaigns against Sony and Bangladesh Bank. The first address is assigned to China Netcom, a Chinese company. Group IB researchers, however, claim they have unconfirmed reports that this address was assigned to North Korea on an interim basis. About the second address, they have few doubts. As the researchers express it in their reports, quote, 175.45.178.222 refers to a North Korean internet service provider. The Whois service indicates that this address is allocated to the Potanyang district, perhaps coincidentally, where the National Defense Commission is located, the highest military body in North Korea, end quote. That's consistent with earlier intelligence community conclusions that the Lazarus Group is in fact simply Bureau 121 of the DPRK's Reconnaissance General Bureau. BAE Systems had, on other grounds, reached the same conclusion in February. It's noteworthy that Group IB's attribution doesn't depend upon discerning similarities in attack code. The researchers find the Russian language snippets in the code to be bad Russian, and suggest the North Koreans put them there as intentional misdirection. This latest research simply ties the Lazarus Group more closely to North Korea. To attribute WannaCry to the Lazarus Group, as Symantec, Kaspersky, and others have done, is, while compelling, still circumstantial. New York-based security firm Flashpoint has noted, without insisting too much on the point, that the code used in the WannaCry campaign points to some fluency in Chinese, but also to broken Korean. There is, of course, as Flashpoint notes, a large Chinese diaspora, and it's possible to achieve fluency in a non-native language. Anyone who read Lord Jim in high school will recall that Joseph Conrad came late in life to English from his native Polish, and he seemed to do just fine. It's also possible to deliberately botch a language in which you're fluent. We is being looking at you, Shadow Brokers, and is thinking you is being doing that same thing to high rollers and OEMs. Sorry, our editorial staff insists on showing off their near-native proficiency in Shadow Broker English. Moving on. NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Technology, recently issued a call for revisions to its cybersecurity framework. Eli Kahn is co-founder of the threat-hunting company Squirrel, and he checked in with us for an overview of the framework.
The NIST Risk Management Framework is, in my opinion, one of the more exciting things happening inside government today. It is becoming the de facto standard for not only how the government, but industry as a whole manages cybersecurity risks. So there's been lots of frameworks developed over the time. NIST 800-53 has been sort of one of the primary documents around security controls, but those were really just lists of security controls and missing sort of the risk framework to wrap around them that is really designed to help an executive think about how they want to manage cyber risks as a whole. So what are the risks that they're willing to accept? What are their overall risk levels that they want to push off to insurance type of controls? And then ultimately, what is their risk tolerance levels?
How does this framework play into the recently released presidential executive order on cybersecurity?
So it's actually at the core of it. The executive order calls for every government agency to adopt the risk management framework as their central way for managing risk within their organization. Now, it's not overly prescriptive. It's not saying exactly how each agency needs to implement that risk management framework, but it does say it must adopt it. But then going through a process that looks at those inherent risk levels and then very thoroughly decides, you know, what are the risk controls that it should adopt based on its inherent risk levels? And ultimately, you know, what are the risks that it's willing to accept, which would be the delta between its inherent risks and the controls that it adopts?
And what kinds of comments and suggestions are being submitted in terms of the framework?
There's been a lot of different comments and suggestions, a lot of them around further defining how to decide what risk controls are appropriate for certain risk levels, and also comments on, you know, maybe some specific risk controls that weren't flagged in the risk management framework that should be identified. But, you know, from our perspective, there are some categories of controls that should have been included that weren't.
For example?
Certainly one that we're quite focused on is the idea of threat hunting. And the risk management framework, you know, specifically calls out automated detection processes as being important controls, but misses the idea of threat hunting and more human-driven detection processes. You know, we see threat hunting as a human-driven iterative approach to detect cyber threats that have evaded detection by other defenses, really evade detection by your automated defenses. What we're advocating for is to be explicit in that you can't rely just on automated detection. You can't just rely on your automated rules in your SIM or your other sensors. You need these human-driven processes also to proactively look for threats that have evaded detection by your automated defenses.
That's Eli Kahn from Squirrel. criminals are increasingly turning to extortion, both crypto ransomware and traditional blackmail. Sometimes the blackmail is a bluff, as Disney claims was the case in the Pirates of the Caribbean extortion attempt. Hackers did not, CEO Iger says, get into Disney servers. They were simply trying to hustle Team Mouse into paying up. Other blackmail is unfortunately quite real, as is the case with a threat to post before and after pictures of a Lithuanian plastic surgery clinic's patients. Older forms of commodity crime are still with us, too. Chipotle this week disclosed that it sustained a breach in its point-of-sale systems that affected most locations in North America. Customer pay card information is said to be at risk. French President Macron is disinclined to let Russian information operations pass unremarked. In a joint news conference held Monday with Russia President Putin, he called out Russian attempts to influence elections, specifically citing Russia Today and Sputnik as agents of influence, spreading disinformation. The two presidents' dialogue was characterized as frank and sincere, which we take to be diplomatic language for see you at knife point and I'm going to get you, sucker. And finally, there are other issues in Google's walled garden. Android users shopping for diversion in Google Play should avoid StarHop and CandyLink. Both apps are serving spam. And lest you be confused by the ambiguities of the word spam, we mean the bad kind of spam, all those tiresome heckling messages that cumber your device, not the tasty Hormel confection made of pork with ham, salt, water, potato starch, sugar, and sodium nitrate. Now, if we could find an app that served up that kind of spam, we'd be all over it, as would every other person of taste and discernment. And with that, we conclude our special linguistic and gastronomic edition of the CyberWire podcast.
Today's episode is sponsored by SRM, your first call for cybersecurity and investigations. Threats today are evolving faster than ever before, and since 2005, SRM has pioneered tailored security solutions for global corporations and their executives. Whether it's defending against cyber attacks with their award-winning team of ethical hackers and incident response specialists, or navigating the murky waters of compliance and ESG challenges, SRM's insight and straightforward advice will help you navigate complex risks and emerge more resilient. Their secret? A culture that nurtures the sharpest minds, giving them access to the newest technologies and the freedom to solve problems in new ways, enabling them to craft simple, effective solutions for your unique cyber challenges. Search Your First Call to discover how SRM can help your business. And now, a word from our sponsor, Zscaler, the leader in cloud security. Cyber attackers are using AI in creative ways to compromise users and breach organizations. In a security landscape where you must fight AI with AI, the best AI protection comes from having the best data. Zscaler has extended its Zero Trust architecture with powerful AI engines that are trained and tuned by 500 trillion daily signals. Learn more about Zscaler Zero Trust plus AI to prevent ransomware and AI attacks. Experience your world secured. Visit zscaler.com/zerotrustAI.
And I'm pleased to be joined today by Justin Harvey. He's the Global Incident Response Leader at Accenture. Justin, welcome back to the show. We wanted to talk today about using offensive capabilities to test security, this whole notion of red teaming. But why don't we start off with that? Tell us, what do we mean when we're talking about red teaming?
Well, red teaming has actually been an evolution or an evolutionary process. Years ago, organizations really wanted to know, do we have vulnerabilities in our networks and in our systems? And that's really where vulnerability management and vulnerability scanning came in. There was a need to see, well, can any of these actually be exploited? We know we have vulnerabilities, but can those be exploited to show an effect. And that was what we would call penetration testing. And then red teaming came along. And red teaming is a little bit more evolved than penetration testing in the sense that can you string along a few of these exploits against vulnerabilities on systems or networks in order to accomplish a mission? The next step after red teaming is adversary simulation, which is, can you utilize these exploits against known vulnerabilities in your network and the system in order to accomplish a mission that would, and then the punchline is, in order to override a business process and in order to impact a business critical function.
So I'm an organization and I want to set up a red team to test my own defensive capabilities. How do I go about doing that?
That's a great question. In my opinion, it should really be after you've got a strong blue capability. Blue is the opposite of red in the security world, which is strong security operations. You've got a SIM in place. You're doing log management. You have great use cases, great threat intelligence. And you think that you've got that nailed pretty well. The red team is really there to provide the blue team a sparring partner. And the blue team is looking day to day at logs. They're going through analysis. They're looking at the events and the alerts. And it gets to be quite tiresome. And when you have a red team, this is a funny term, a friendly adversary, someone who you know isn't going to wreck your systems or to create an availability issue or steal your data, it really gives you a sparring partner to draw some great conclusions and see how your blue team would really react during an investigation or during an attack.
All right, interesting stuff. Justin Harvey, thanks for joining us.
Managing the requirements for modern security programs is increasingly challenging and time-consuming. Enter Vanta. Vanta gives you one place to centralize and scale your security program. Quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for ISO 27001, SOC 2, and more. You can leverage Vanta's market-leading trust management platform to unify risk management and secure the trust of your customers. Plus, use Vanta AI to save time when completing security questionnaires. CyberWire daily listeners can get $1,000 off by going to vanta.com/cyber. That's vanta.com/cyber.
And that's the CyberWire. We are proudly produced in Maryland by our talented team of editors and producers. I'm Dave Bittner. Thanks for listening.
And now a word from our sponsor, SpyCloud, the leader in operationalizing cybercrime analytics. Traditional threat intelligence is a thing of the past. Cyber criminals are stealing vast amounts of credentials, session cookies, and financial data every day, and it's hard to keep up. SpyCloud is the trusted partner businesses turn to fully understand their darknet exposure risk and neutralize threats before it's too late. SpyCloud alerts your organization as soon as an employee or customer's data appears on the darknet, so you can act faster than bad actors to prevent cyber attacks like ransomware, session hijacking, account takeover, and online fraud. With insights from the industry's largest repository of recaptured data, protect the digital identities and systems most important to your business. Get your free corporate darknet exposure report at spycloud.com/cyberwire and see what information criminals have in their hands today. That's spycloud.com/cyberwire.